This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You need surgery.
Bisexuality.
Bisexual.
I'm bisexual.
Bisexual.
Triple bypass.
Bisexual.
Bisexual.
Bisexuality.
I'm bisexual.
Bisexuality.
The best of both worlds.
Triple bypass.
Triple bypass.
Triple bypass on Joy 94.9.
Triple Bypass acknowledges that we broadcast from the lands of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation. We pay our respects to elders past, present and emerging, and to any Aboriginal or Torres Strait Islander people who are listening today. We acknowledge that this land was never ceded, no treaty was ever signed, and that it always was and always will be Aboriginal land.
My, I'm so bi, I can't stop my wandering eye. I wanna taste them all before I'm dead.
Hot boys to my back, soft girls to my front. How the hell do I choose when I want everyone? This isn't a game for some boyfriend. I love them all the same, this is my problem.
My, I'm so bi, I can't stop my wandering eye. My, I'm so bi, want them all, the girls and guys. I ain't afraid to talk of sex with the XY or the XX. It's something I can't hide, so I'll wear it with the pride. Like Solander with Woo and Mikael Blomqvist too.
Hot boys to my back, soft girls to my front. How the hell do I choose when I want everyone? This isn't a game for some boyfriend. I love them all the same, this is my problem.
My, I'm so bi, I can't stop my wandering eye. My, I'm so bi, I want them all, my girls and guys. Gender bender, trans, whatever, any shape or size, don't care, cause it's your eyes in which I wanna stare, no matter what you got down there.
My,
can't stop my wandering eye. My, I'm so bi. I want them all, my girls and guys.
That was Alicia Champion with the song Bi. What a good way to start the show. My name's Ruby.
I'm Anthony.
And you've tuned in to Triple Bypass, where the bisexuals are taking over the airwaves for the next hour. Here to bring you all the latest and greatest in the bi plus community. We're here for the bisexuals, pansexuals, polysexuals, queer, and those who don't even need a label. We're here for all of you.
And to expand your bi song playlists, your repertoire of bi songs, because I think before this show, I had not listened to this many bi theme songs.
I didn't know there were any. And then it turns out there's three real good ones. And we've played them many, many times. We're coming up on the show. We're joined by Rosie Nelson, which I'm really excited about. So Rosie is here from Bristol in the UK.
Yes.
And is a bisexual queer PhD student from the University of Bristol. And their research is focused around bisexuality and non-monosexuality, so multigender attraction, and the romantic, and basically how it interacts with gender and gender identity.
And this is very exciting for us because I think, correct me if I'm wrong, Ruby, this is the first time we've had an international bi researcher on the show, live in the studio.
I think it is.
Yes.
I think it is. So, Rosie,
it means we've made it.
That's definitely what it means. No, I thought I'd made it because we got connected over bi Twitter, which is like a whole network, and there's like a whole network of bi academics, and I just kind of sneak in there. I'm like, I'm not an academic, but can I talk about your research on the radio? And then someone was like, Rosie, you're going to Australia. I know someone who's very bisexual in Australia. Talk to this person.
Brilliant. It's who you know.
It's who you know. So it's been really lovely to actually have a chat with someone and be like, so instantly just kind of talk about bi theory and be like, oh, there is so much to talk about. How have you found that, Rosie?
Amazing. I mean, it was great to be connected on Twitter, first and foremost. It, you know, made me feel like a celebrity. But to be able to come to Melbourne and, you know, find such an active bisexual community and, you know, so many discussions and events, you know, looking at Midsummer Festival that was just happening around here, hearing what's coming up for Mardi Gras and everything, you know, there's a really active community and it's been wonderful to see and speak to people involved in it.
Yeah, it's been really lovely. If you want to get in touch and be part of our community, you definitely can. Just email us at onair@joy.org.au or text in at 0427 569 949. You can also find us on Facebook at Triple Bypass on Joy, on Twitter at Triple Bypass, and on Instagram at Triple Bypass Joy. And of course, don't forget, we also have a podcast, which you are very welcome to go and find and subscribe to make sure you never miss an episode. We do have some special things that we only release as podcasts. To make sure you don't miss out on that, you can find us on iTunes. And if you wanted to give us a five-star rating, that'd be great. And if you don't like the show, you can keep that to yourself. That's fine. Don't you share that.
You're entitled to your feelings, but
you're
stay away from
to
us.
Your opinion. Just keep it yours. But oh, no jokes. We'd love to, and also tell your friends, we do really like to be able to like reach out with the community. We've had some really lovely interactions with people who have listened to the show from around the world, and we always like to hear from you. You can always email us at triplebypass@joy.org.au as well. If you know someone you might want to see on the show or a topic you want to see featured, all that jazz. Luckily for me, I just get to be like, you seem interesting. Can I come on my show? It's a great...
That's how it happens.
It's an excellent pickup line.
So all you bisexual, pansexual, multigender attracted people out there who are doing amazing things in the community, come to us.
Or
come
allies who are doing really cool stuff around the bi plus community as well.
Yes.
Now, in bi news, we have... there's a few things. In Australia, there's a landmark study that was being launched just recently. That's actually covered in World Wide Wave, the show that's on... two shows before us. You can find that podcast, and that's about basically tracking gay and bisexual men's attitude on body image. And this is because they said there's been a rise in steroid use in young men that they think is fueled by social media, which has led to a pretty dangerous pursuit of muscle-bound perfection.
Yes.
And that because there's already evidence that gay and bisexual men are more vulnerable than straight men to eating issues and body image disorders and using appearance-enhancing drugs, there is a greater need for research in this particular space. So there'll be a global study run from Australia that's looking specifically at how gay and bisexual men are impacted by body image and what the outcomes are for their health. So I think that's really wonderful, though I think it's also a bit, you know, I think it's good that these research is being done, that this problem exists, but I do think it's like that we're seeing this kind of rise in these uses is also, I think it's a reflection that we have still got a long way to go as far as how we view ourselves and what we need to project into the world.
Yes.
And I think there is a lot of pressure for men, people who identify as men, and mask people to present something when a lot of their interactions do be based a lot on like just image-based dating apps.
Right, and the male body or the mask body is becoming more and more visible, and there's more, we're starting to see more and more images of what the ideal, this hegemonic masculine sort of ideal is. And I think in the queer male community, I can't really speak for straight men really, but having been on gay apps and queer apps, there's a lot of sharing of body parts. There's an obsession with cock. I mean, surprise, everyone.
Dick pics? Right. Oh, it's not just the gays have to deal with that.
Right. No. There's a lot of body. I'm sure it happens in the straight world as well, but there is something about the way we scrutinize each other's bodies in the gay scene that is problematic, and we're harming each other by doing it.
Yeah, and I think that it's good to have the data that's focusing on the knee for that kind of, to see what the images are, because I think a lot of the time that we're really harsh critiques when we're critiquing ourselves. So I found that, you know, queer people tend to can be judgmental because we're often very we judge ourselves very harshly.
Well, we grow up in a context where we're used to scrutinising ourselves, our relationships, our identities, and we're used to turning that gaze onto ourselves. Mm-hmm. And also when we internalise some of these horrible messages that are said about us, like, we're going to do it about our body parts as well.
Yeah. Well, and in some other news, Rita Ora has been speaking out about the backlash that her song Girls received. So Rita Ora wrote a song that referenced, you know, her attraction to women, but did it in a way that a lot of some people in the LGBTI community felt was disrespectful. And actually, they hadn't been aware that Rita is multigender attracted. And so in the end, Rita ended up apologising and having to come out, basically. And she was saying that it was a really dark time in her life, and that because she was younger, she was quite experimental, and so she still has gone through that, because she goes, I was figuring out who I was and this is how I was doing it. And I wrote a song about that because I thought people would understand that that's an experience and a cultural touchstone, but I forgot that no one else knew that's what I'd gone through. And to be fair, I think that that's something that a lot of women have gone through and do go through. And I still remember that I felt a lot of the criticism for that was biphobic as hell.
Right.
Rosie, you also mentioned that Ariana Grande has kind of come up a bit of fire for, because she does not identify as LGBTI, as I understand.
Not to my knowledge, but I recently saw an article that was looking at her most recent music video, Dump Your Boyfriend or Get Rid of Your Boyfriend, whatever the name of the song is. And
good advice.
That's earrings that say that.
But at the end of the song, then, I think that there's a part where she turns to kiss the girlfriend of the boyfriend that she has been talking to. And there was a recent article released on BuzzFeed exploring what that was all about and what that meant for queerness and representation, and also this idea of loving yourself and whether queerness was being used as a metaphor for that. It's a really good article, actually. I recommend. Mm.
So isn't it because, like, the woman she kisses is herself, though? Isn't that...
Yeah, so...
Is it a spoiler if it's a music video? Sorry.
I'm not going to watch this, so I need to know more about it, so please.
But it was the woman in the video essentially mirrors how Ariana Grande looks, so, you know, that sort of, like, famous long straight ponytail, you know, a very similar aesthetic. So this idea that they were mirroring or matching and, you know, maybe the same in some ways, was something that was spoken about a lot in this article. Yeah.
Fascinating.
Yeah, I think it is. I know that when I've spoken to some other of my friends musicians in Melbourne, talk about there is coin to be made in being a queer musician at the moment. Mm. So there is that kind of concern about that becoming used in that way. And that actually happened in Russia in the 90s, like, you know, with Tattoo and stuff like that. Mm. Look where that turned out. Yeah. So I'm not saying there's a history, I think, of performing queerness as a way to kind of draw in viewers, or because it's kind of seen as, like, the artistic, you're more artistic if you're queer. It's like, you know, there was an episode of Ugly Betty, if you ever watched that show a long time ago, where a designer, like, pretended to be gay because he was a male designer and that's how he could be taken seriously.
Yeah.
That kind of idea of there are some professions. But I just think that's just, it's the same kind of binary boxing in that we do. It's like, well, if you're an artist and you're doing this, then you should be this.
Yeah.
As opposed to...
Yeah, I guess it could always still be used because, you know, you mentioned Tattoo, and, you know, that was a very formative experience for me, like, watching that music video when I was younger. I was like, oh, right, there's some stuff here.
Like, oh, that's awakened something.
Yeah. What's going on? So, you know, although it was, you know, problematic in various ways, I guess it still does have a place for some people like me. So.
Well, yeah, absolutely. And I think that's interesting. We're going to get into that right after these messages and a song that was Rosie's choice. I think it's the first time we've ever played K-pop on this show. So thank you for that. Call Me Baby by XO coming up after this, a few messages. Stay tuned. This is Triple Bypass and you're on Joy.
사람이야 함께하는 매 순간이 like boom 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 boom
Hey girl 영원 같던 찰나
희망 같은 순간
나는 한순간 뚫고 가
너
내 이름 불러주면 나에게로 다가와
몰라 순간처럼 맞아 너를 마주하는 순간 oh my 편하게 여기 앉아 이제 내 얘기를 들어봐
oh, I don't care 멀리 멀리 돌아간대도 이렇게 너의 곁에 단한 남자가 될 테니
내 말은
내 입술에 맘
있으면 들어와 나를 깨워 A time's wasting girl
So don't wait
Don't wait too long 빛나는 것들을 만나 그 안에 진짜를 봐봐
어떤 말도 넘었어 그 믿음을 보여준 너
모두 변해 널 떠나간대도 넌 나만의 레일에 내 손을 잡아주는 그거면 내 것들을 만나 그 안에 진짜를 봐봐
Call me baby, babe, call me baby Call me baby, babe, call me baby
널 향해 거쳐가 맘마
Wilson, former child actor, current writer, aspiring bicon, and you are listening to the show that puts the B in LGBTIQ. Triple Bypass on Joy 94.9.
That was, I'm not even sure, Call Me Baby by XO.
XO.
And you're listening to Triple Bypass, the show where the bisexuals take over the airwaves and broadcast out for the multigender attractor community under any label you choose. And that was also Mara Wilson.
We love Mara. Thank you for that, Mara. And I'm Anthony.
I'm Ruby.
I'm Rosie.
Rosie is our guest tonight. Rosie's here all the way from Bristol in the UK. And I think we found out she's our first international academic guest.
Yes.
Because Rosie has been doing research on the interaction of gender identity and sexuality, particularly for multigender, well, only for multigender attracted people, which is so...
Yeah, so we're going to talk about your research. So thank you for coming on to our show. We're really excited. But just before we launch into the show, that was a very special song sent out to a very special person, wasn't it?
Oh, yes. So that song, an absolute banger, if I may, was chosen because I keep playing it, much to my partner's dislike back home, because it gets into their head and they can't stop hearing it all throughout the day. So, Nick... When you're listening to this, I hope that stays in your head all day. Love you.
Hello to Nick in Bristol and have a lie down after that, maybe.
Now, so back to the serious matter of researching sexuality or we actually just had a message in. I want to interject.
Sure.
Just listening to your... So this is from Skylar. Cheers, Skylar. Just listening to your discussion, I think body image within the gay community is nothing new. There has always been an unhealthy obsession with being body perfect for gay men. I feel the difference nowadays is the accessibility and acceptance for men to access things that alter their physical appearance. In the case of steroids, it's not as underground now and far more open for men to access to what they than it would have been years ago. There's also a higher rate of meth use within the community, which for some is linked with body image for its weight loss effect. Thank you so much for messaging in, Skylar. That's a really great insight.
Yeah, and I really agree with all of those points in gay male or queer male spaces and online and with meth use and steroids and body image. Yep, all those things. Yep.
If you want to jump into the conversation, please get in touch. Text us on 0427569949 or email us at onair@joy.org.au. You can also catch up with this conversation later via podcast on either on iTunes with Joy Podcasts or at joy.org.au/triple bypass, where you can find over 2 years' worth of good bi content.
Yeah, amazing bi content.
I just like the pun. No, but we're here with Rosie, who is doing a qualitative sociological project looking at non-monosexuality or multigender attraction. So you did 30 one-on-one interviews with non-monosexual people of all ages, genders, and backgrounds, and then a two-week-long photo diary with 9 people. Is that correct? Right?
Yeah, that's right, yeah. No, it's really great to have the opportunity just in the course of doing my research to speak to so many people who had such a diverse experience. I think that, you know, in my personal life as a bisexual queer person, then I'd mainly only spoken to people in depth about their sexual identity with cis people and largely women. So to have the opportunity to hear about how non-monosexuality and gender interacted with so many different types of people was really honestly a privilege to be trusted with their stories in the course of research.
And so the three things that you kind of you brought out in like in the summary you sent me was the kind of the power and flexibility of labeling and, you know, finding those ideas of identity and validation through those, but also how they can change. I think this is particularly an issue that is so relevant to the bi plus community because there is often a lot of debate about what label you're using and why.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And because there are multiple labels you can use to signal multigender attraction, and people who are multigender attracted might not even use labels that signify that at all.
Mm-hmm.
And so what did your research find in that was particularly new or kind of gave you your own sense of labeling?
So it definitely fed in with some things that we already knew. You know, this idea that labels matter so much to people in terms of validating oneself and in terms of being able to access and find a history and a sense of community through being able to claim a label. You know, through saying I'm bisexual, then I'm immediately able to relate to all of the bisexuals who've come before me, you know, engage with the kind of speeches and readings and activists that have historically been so important. But then also, you know, this idea of the fluidity of labels kept coming up. A lot of the participants I spoke to had previously identified as lesbians or gay men, or had maybe adapted their label in some way. You know, maybe they'd originally come out as bisexual before deciding that queer was a better fit. And sort of the way in which people understood how that happened was really related not only to their life experience. Obviously, if they had originally identified as lesbian or gay or straight and then come to be bisexual, it was due to figuring out an attraction. But if they were changing within the multigendered labels, it was just thinking about what fits most. And, you know, that often required a lot of soul searching, a lot of reading, a lot of research. And the kind of work people put into finding and negotiating their identity was really showing in the course of the interviews. You know, these people had read so many books, read so many websites, had so many conversations to try and find something to accurately and adequately describe their identity that they could then take and talk about to other people who often, you know, the way of the world didn't accept the identity. You know, the kind of coming out as bisexual and then just people saying no, you're a lesbian or you're gay or you're straight and just experimenting, you know, these classic kind of responses was something that a lot of participants spoke about in trying to talk about their labels.
Well, you could play bingo, I think, with the common responses you get coming out as bi.
I find that really interesting that people were preparing themselves or trying to find a language, trying to find a discourse, trying to find a culture that they can locate themselves in. And I find that that's really common for queer people because that makes them sort of naturally, or maybe not naturally, but they sort of become activists, really political in their thinking, because we have to, like you said something about finding a history, that requires a lot of searching and reading and skilling up.
For bi-specific history particularly, like it's a... There's like a handful of books, I think. So, few. Yeah, and so I think, and what you mentioned as well, because I thought it was interesting, because I think a lot of people, in my experience, have found labels and they've changed labels because they didn't know much about the label or because they had ideas about the label that were not really formed by research but kind of from what they were hearing about it, which I think also can make sense because to investigate something, you have to see it as something that's worth looking into and treasuring and understanding. And I think we're now seeing that happen a lot more with multigender attraction. I don't think it has necessarily always been the case for most people, where it hasn't even been... It's been a neglected part. It's just kind of... It's dismissed. It's not acknowledged as opposed to being, like, pushed back against or embraced. It's just kind of... It's there. It's not important.
Yeah, yeah. No, absolutely. And this kind of work that people had to do around their identities, you know, it was so much work to feel good about it, so much work to feel positive, to be able to even say, I'm bisexual, I'm pansexual, I'm queer, whatever. And it just required so much emotional effort. And often in isolation, you know, these people were figuring out their identities before they were able to talk to many people about it, either because they hadn't yet found any other non-monosexual people, or they were working in the context of their, you know, very heteronormative families and so on. So all of this work happening in isolation, it was, you know, very interesting to hear emotional effort that
right.
I'm looking forward to hearing more about
yes.
it. The next thing that we're going to talk about after this break is gender presentation for non-monosexual people, which I'm very excited about. So stay tuned for that. Coming up, we've got Mojo Juju with Shut Your Mouth, which I think is also quite appropriate given we're just talking about the shit people say when you come out as bi and pan. So stay tuned. This is Triple Bypass and you're on Joy 94.9.
Your mouth, you don't know what you're on about. It's a never-ending diatribe of nonsense that you dribble. Oh, please get out. I don't recall inviting you, and I'm so amazed that it doesn't seem to faze you even just a little.
is Joy 94.9. You've tuned into Triple Bypass, here to put the B in LGBTIQA+. And that was Shut Your Mouth by Mojo Juju. I'm Ruby.
I'm Anthony. And I will not.
I know, we couldn't. We're on the radio. What would you listen to? We are joined by Rosie Nelson, a PhD student from the University of Bristol in the UK, who's been studying the interaction of non-monosexual or multigender-attracted sexuality and gender identity. One of my favourite things to talk about at length, which we have. we've been talking before about the flexibility and power of labels for multigender attracted people, whether they use bisexual, pansexual, queer, or they don't want to use a label at all, and the reasons for that. We'd love to hear what your relationship is with labels and if that's been a journey for you. I know it has been for me. If you want to get in touch, just email us at onair@joy.org.au, or you can text us on 0427 569 949. Now, one of the other areas of your research that I found really interesting was how multigender attracted people present with gender and gender presentation to try and communicate their identity. So we've talked about the kind of the joke stereotypes we've made up about bi plus people, particularly around like bi plus women and femme folk will wear like, you know, high waisted jeans, the tucked in blouse and cuffed pants, and like that kind of androgynous look. Yeah. And apparently that your research is backing that up a bit.
Yeah, there were definitely some really interesting findings when I spoke to my participants about gender and how they sort of understood their own genders. You know, I spoke to such a diverse range of people, cis men, cis women, trans men and trans women and non-binary people. And, you know, often people really wanted to communicate the fact that they were non-monosexual in one way or another. You know, they wanted to be visibly queer. They wanted to be visibly bisexual. They did not want to be visibly gay because that was not showing their identity in that they identified with. But they definitely wanted to show, I am bisexual or I am pansexual or I am queer. This was for the majority of participants. Some did not, I will say. So when I got down to it, you know, I was asking like, okay, how do you do this? You know, how do you present yourself? And people had such a diverse range of answers. There was not one answer. Cuffed jeans came up, a leather jacket came up, pins and badges, the bisexual bob, bisexual glasses. You know, like there was such a range. And some people just pointing to the colours of the flag, you know, like maybe we can use that. But what it broadly fell into was people choosing to masculinize or feminize their outfits in certain ways. And there has been previous research that has found this, that often bisexuals and non-monosexual people adopt a sort of, you know, it's been termed as a chameleon-like appearance by a researcher called Sarah Daly. And it's this idea that you're mixing masculine and feminine coding in your clothes to show that, yes, like I go in this heteronormative world, but I also go in this homonormative world. You know, like I'm giving you little clues that if you're in the know, you can pick it up. But if you don't know, then you're just going to see me as whatever you think I am, which is, you know, realistically probably straight. That's the massive assumption, right? However, interestingly, you know, when we were talking about this, then there was quite a significant difference amongst the genders. You know, trans and non-binary people in particular had a very different relationship with gender presentation. And instead of trying to show non-monosexuality, it was much more important to be recognized as the gender that they were and to be seen as, oh, you're non-binary or, oh, you're a man or a woman, based on their presentation. So there was a significant difference there amongst the participants.
I think it's interesting because what is dressing like a non-binary person?
Exactly.
Yeah. Tell me.
Yeah.
I'm trying to figure this one out.
Tell me about it.
I think that's really interesting because the discussion of, I think there's always been, often I think even without being consciously aware of it, a lot of BIPOC people I know will kind of, particularly like femme non-binary people, like femme BIPOC people have tried to, you know, they do dress a little more mask. And I think a part of that has been because our relationships with genders is different from, you know, a really early age. We interact with gender really differently from the get-go because it's not the defining factor of this is going to be a boyfriend, this is going to be a friend. It's a just like, these are people, and I fit in with these people for these reasons, and these people for these reasons, and I don't want to be seen for these things. And but to hear that that's actually being backed up and that it's a conscious effort, it's really, it's interesting, because I know that the cuff jeans thing, you know, is this by a culture and is it being happening more now because we've decided that it is and we're all adopting it as a sense of belonging?
And to feel something like you're expressing something honest about yourself. And I think that sort of reaching for traditionally feminine and masculine characteristics and sort of mixing them up in some way in how you dress or what you wear or even how you walk, you know, I think that's important. It does, it's just interesting. I can relate to that in lots of ways, yeah. I'm sure lots of bi people.
I'm really curious as well. One of the things we've talked about, like, off air is people, like, you know, discovering their bisexuality leading to discover their gender identity, and vice versa. So was that a common theme that was coming up?
So what, non-monosexuality informing a gender identity?
Or realising that you're, you know, or like having that insight and being starting to explore gender identity.
For some people, yeah, it was really quite a split amongst the participants in terms of, you know, for some people they first realized that they were bisexual or pansexual, and that might have led to then a sort of exploration of, you know, perhaps a non-binary identity and so on. You know, people had, most everyone had questioned their gender as a result of figuring out their non-monosexual identity. Most everyone had thought about what that then meant for their gender identity. But for some people, it was the other way around. For some people who very quickly came to a firm gender identity, then they later understood their non-monosexuality, which could be quite difficult. Some trans participants mentioned that they didn't want to be seen as, you know, just because they were trans, they had a more fluid understanding of gender that then led to a bisexual identity, right. You know, that wasn't connected in any way. It just happened to be two things that were about them. And they were very worried about those kind of connections being drawn.
Can I ask why?
I think it was this idea that, you know, thinking that gender is flexible and fluid, and maybe that questioned their gender identity more.
I understand. It is really interesting, I think, because, like, we've spoken with Misty Farquhar on the show, who is an academic in Perth, who's looking at the intersections of non-binary gender identity and non-monosexual sexuality, and that there is such a huge correlation there. It's just interesting to see that even people who sort of identify as cisgendered, there is an element of gender bendering in presentation.
Definitely.
Yeah, I think that's fascinating. And as someone who, like, you know, it was discovering and really thinking about bisexuality that helped me start to really pull apart how much of my own gender was expression and fitting in and how much of it was based on how I was feeling and what it actually meant to me and how I wanted to be feeling about it and how I wanted to be presented and seen. So it's again, interesting just to find those points of commonality in community. So that's really lovely.
Rosie, were you surprised with these findings? Was it what you were expecting, or what was your feeling about it?
So, broadly, then, because I was researching this as someone queer and bisexual, you know, these were questions that I had often been thinking of myself. You know, like, I had found, as I was Tindering my way around Bristol, Tinderella, that I was very often styling myself differently depending on who I was going on a date with. So, you know, if I was going on a date with a cis man, I would wear a beautiful dress and, you know, some delicate, fresh-faced makeup. You know, no makeup.
I work up like this.
Yeah, like, this is just my normal face. Don't ask any further questions.
It took 14 minutes.
Whereas when I was dating women, then, you know, I would sort of get the leather jacket, the skinny black jeans, some kind of t-shirt with a slogan on. So, you know, I knew that these were things that I had considered. And also, you know, my friends who were non-monosexual in one way or another, I had seen them go through similar considerations. So, you know, these answers weren't deeply unexpected, but they were often far more complicated than I initially thought. You know, people did think about them in very different ways, and the way in which people expressed queerness could be in a very different way than I would express queerness. So that was very interesting. You know, like, queerness was sometimes hyper femininity for some women, and, like, you know, really going, like, max dress to almost make it, like, satirical, you know? And It was a very interesting range of answers, but you know, it was similar to my experience broadly.
Mm. Excellent. And so the last bit we're going to get to after these messages is about how gender and relationships has worked for these people, which is very exciting. So stay tuned. We'll be right back after. And this is not another one of your choices. This is Pink featuring Grimes by Janelle Monáe. You're listening to Triple Bypass, and this is Joy 94.9. This is Joy 94.9, and you've tuned in to Triple Bypass. That was Pink featuring Grimes by Janelle Monáe. My name's Ruby.
I'm Anthony.
And we're joined by Rosie Nelson here to talk about bisexual research and research around the most gender attracted community. And Rosie's here all the way from Bristol.
Yay.
In the UK, which is about almost as far away as you can get from Australia. And has been coming, basically been talking about their research on looking at the interactions of non-monosexuality and gender identity and gender performance. And we've been discussing the importance of labels and how important they're for validation, and how much, if you're multigender attracted, you have to study to understand which label will work for you, because we have, why just have one when you can have so many? Yes. And also gender presentation, which has been quite a mind-blowing discussion. If you've just tuned in now and want to hear about all this, you can find the podcast at joy.org.au/triple bypass or on iTunes. We've also got some messages in.
We have, and the lovely Esh says, body image issues within the queer community needs to be highlighted more often and researched. Great topic tonight. Thanks, Esh, and yes, it is a very important topic.
That was about Australia had started a study into the body image for gay and bisexual men, which is really exciting.
And thank you very much to Sarah, who's also sent us a message. Sarah says, I'm a bi cis woman, and when I was with a female partner, I often wore androgynous outfits like she did, but I'm actually more comfortable as femme. I'd also got an asymmetrical haircut because I wanted to look queer enough to be with a woman. I no longer believe in queer enough, just you are enough. Isn't that gorgeous?
I love that ending so much. I think that am I queer enough is such a constant thing that comes up in the bi plus, the bi pan, polysexual, omnisexual queer communities, that just having that sense of needing to perform, needing to find some way to signal that you are different, that you are you want people to see that you're different. Mm. And because I feel often in my experience, a lot of bi plus people actually feel they need to perform more, particularly if they're in a relationship that will be read as a straight relationship.
Yes. We often hear people in our community who come to the social events and they're anxious about bringing their opposite gender or sex partner to our events because of that reason.
Yeah, because it's like, I don't feel like I belong here. This space isn't for me. And that actually, I think, is an excellent segue into this next little part, which is how gender in relationships works for multigender attracted non-monosexual people. So what were the findings around this area, Rosie?
So this was actually the part that I was personally most interested in, based on sort of my own experience and how I'd related to other people. But, you know, I was interested in asking the participants of the research whether their relationships had felt different, or whether they were attracted to different people in different ways based on gender. And, you know, there were so many interesting and diverse ranges of experience here. It's hard to even, you know, summarize it into some neat findings. But, like, the way in which people have experienced gender in relationships is, you know, it's very significant. Because basically, you know, as the participants continued to say, that their attraction would generally happen regardless of the gender of the person that they were interested in. You know, gender wasn't exactly a defining factor in who or why they were attracted to someone. But the point was that, you know, we live in a gendered world. Things are very divided according to gender. And so consequently, the way that attraction would happen, or would, you know, exist, or that you'd have to interact with other people that you were attracted to, was very gendered. You know, so that, you know, thinking about the way that we flirt with people, there were some people, some women who, when they were flirting with men, would, you know, be far more giggly, sort of toss their hair back, you know, this kind of thing. And then when flirting with other women, would not do those things and be more sort of build an intense emotional connection relatively quickly, you know, leaning across the table, going into deep conversation type of thing. You know, the way in which behavior happened could sometimes be affected with some people, you know, depending on the gender dynamic, then, you know, you might follow a you know, the men open the door for the women type of thing. You know, within sex, then, you know, maybe men weren't getting penetrated in the course of their relationships with women, for example, and so on and so forth. And then thinking about future, of course, you know, all the questions about children. You know, marriage equality is now a thing in Britain, thankfully, and we've had it for a while. But those kind of questions of whether you play into that heteronormative dynamic would come up for people, depending on the gender of their partner. So, you know, attraction would occur regardless of gender, but, you know, we don't exist in a vacuum. We do live in a gendered world and have to follow some norms.
Yeah, and negotiating those roles and who does what and how was really interesting when we're going against or trying to deliberately go against heteronormative ideas, particularly around parenting. And I think it's really lovely to hear in queer spaces how we're even trying to find different labels to refer to parents, not using mum and dad but some other language. Yeah,
and I think we've had Maria
Pallotta-Cirelli. I've practiced.
thank goodness. In her book, you know, Bi Men, Bi Women, which is about women who've dated bisexual men, found that bisexual men who were confident in their sexuality and secure in that were often extremely equal partners when it came to child raising, when it came to housework, when it came to these things. There was less gender roles being played to an extent. What I thought was interesting as well was this idea of, you know, we don't exist in a vacuum and the context that gender can place on interactions. And that made me think of, I've been reading a book called By Any Other Name, which is a history anthology written by two bisexual women. It was begun in 1985 and was published in 1991. So just basically near the written and documented and gathered in response to what was happening to the bi plus community during the AIDS epidemic in the United States. And one of the things that they were quoting, a philosopher was talking about, because multigender attracted people interact with gender differently, this person actually saw people who saw gender as the single most attraction as gender fetishist. Because she was just like, so if you're obsessed with someone's gender, that's a fetish. Mm. And so, you know, and it was so interesting to kind of think of when you look at like the leather daddy community, for example, that does fetishize masculinity in that way. Mm. And I'm just like, and it was just an interesting way to look at things as far as it's not being attracted to a gender, it's having gender as a fetish. Mm. And I'm not saying that's accurate. It was just a very interesting way of kind of reframing this discussion of, you know, because often bisexuality is seen as a fetish. Or a sexual practice. It's one of those things that you choose to... You're a practicing bisexual, you're a retired bisexual. Mm. When did you choose to start having sex with multiple genders all at the same time, I assume? You know, that's the kind of things that people kind of are thinking when they think of bisexuality. So it's really interesting to see it being more that, no, we're all attracted to different people, but gender plays a different role depending on how much of a gender fetish you have.
Mm. Interesting, because I think that that's always been the sort of the nuanced difference in the definitions between bisexuality and pansexuality. I know there's lots of definitions, but just one of the ones I've heard is around bisexuals being attracted to the person because of gender and attracted to all genders for different reasons, and pansexuality being attracted to the person regardless of gender. And there's this sort of slight difference there.
But I think regardless of gender, as you were saying, Rosie, can't exist because...
Well, yeah.
Because gender is...
That's what I think.
Yeah. Because gender does have an impact and shapes us in a lot of ways, often quite negatively.
Yeah, right. It was just, you know, the difference of walking down the street with a partner of a particular gender. You know, you're both going to be read as gendered beings and people are going to respond to you based on that, you know, whether it's, you know, you might experience some homophobia, you might experience questions about when you're next going to have some babies. You know, that right. Those kind of dynamics are established by other people judging the gender of your relationship. Even if you're in relationship, doesn't matter. You know, the gender doesn't matter to you. People respond to it.
Yeah.
And the gender might not matter, but it might change how you interact with them and how you, like, I know that, as you think, the way you can flirt is different because there are languages and contexts. Like if I'm talking to a straight man and he reads me as a cis woman, if I am having a conversation with him and showing interest in what he is saying, there is a good chance that, depending on the where we are, that this will be seen as a flirtation. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Just because of the fact that I may, his idea of a woman speaking to a man and the interactions that we all having are romantic because that is how those two genders are supposed to be in their interactions.
Yes, and then if he knows you're bisexual, then there's that extra layer of...
And if he knows I'm non-binary, his whole head explodes.
Next.
This is so. Can I ask? We have to wrap up really soon. It's been so, so lovely to have you here on the program. Do you reckon you can tell us briefly what has led you to becoming a doctor of bisexuality?
Doctor of
bisexuality. Mainly the cool title. No.
More about that.
No. So this, you know, it's a very, very personal study for me. Frankly, I mean, you know, I came out or, you know, began to, I began to realize very, very young, but I actually figured it out when I was about 16. And that whole time, you know, I didn't really have much validation or recognition of my sexuality, and talking about it, then I'd find that people would you know, try and convince me otherwise, tell me I was a lesbian, tell me I was just experimenting, and so on and so forth. So I had to do a lot of that work in isolation in terms of making it okay for myself. I remember very clearly the first time I met an older bisexual who was, you know, they weren't that old. They were, I think they were like in their early 40s. And it just felt so validated of, there is someone who isn't just 18 years old and is bisexual. So this whole research has come from this ongoing passion with trying to show people that that's a real thing, show other people who may be struggling with their sexuality that it's a real thing, that we exist and that you're not alone. And in terms of thinking about the way in which it interacts with gender identity, that's been a constant question for me as I find myself doing very gendered things in different relationships and considering gender quite importantly, you know, thinking about, as I referenced before, how I dress on different dates or how I behave in different relationships and so on. It's all a very passion-led project, and obviously, you know, in academia, bisexuality and non-monosexuality generally is very, very understudied. There isn't very much research. We need more, and this is hoping to contribute to it.
If people want to be able to follow your research, you mentioned that you do tweet about it a bit, so how can people find you on Twitter?
Yep, so you can find me on Twitter at Roro Panolo.
Could you spell that, please?
Roropanolo.
And you have to say it like that. Rosie, can I just say thank you so much for your research? It means a lot to us. You know, we are paying attention all the way here in Melbourne in what you're doing. And any bi research or non-monosexual research, I think, is gutsy and very much needed. Thank
Especially
you.
When you are coming from such a personal place, because, you know, you're interacting with things that are your life as much as they are anything else. And I think it's fantastic. So thank you for bringing us representation in the academic sphere. Lisa, that is the end of our show for tonight. We'll be back next week again at 9 p.m. Stay tuned for Local Roots coming up next. We're going to be at Mardi Gras.
Yes.
So if you're going to watch that broadcast, tune in, and maybe you'll see Anthony and me dressed up on our float.
A bi float.
Oh, what other float is there, darling? You're on Joy 94.9. This has been Triple Bypass, and have a beautiful night.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.